The mobile hunter is obsessed with exploring unfamiliar places, and this is what our gear is designed to do. At Latitude Outdoors, we build mobile hunting equipment for hunters who like to move often and move fast. Whether you're an experienced whitetail hunter or new to the game, if you want to be mobile, we have options that are worth considering. Our saddles, climbing sticks, and platforms are made right here in the USA and are available at latitudeoutdoors.com. Thanks for checking out the gear and good luck this season. The climbing stick has finally gone metal-free. Our goal for the Carbon SS climbing sticks was to make them as light as possible without sacrificing durability. And we wanted to make them stack flush so they're compact for saddle hunters and tree stand hunters. The new aerospace carbon fiber technology allowed us to achieve ultra-light weight specs and removed all moving parts and hardware for improved durability. The sticks also feature our patent-pending metal-free attachment method that makes setup easier, faster, and quieter. The Carbon SS climbing sticks are made right here in the USA and come with a 5-year manufacturer's warranty. For more information, visit latitudeoutdoors.com.
Welcome to the Life Outdoors Podcast. Our mission is to educate, entertain, and motivate. We speak life into and through the outdoors. Now join your hosts, Nate Bailey and Gage Bailey, as we navigate through the mountains of this life.
Welcome to the Life Outdoors Podcast, and today we're going to be talking about some crazy things that almost sound too goofy to be true. But let me assure you, as of 18 of November of 2022, this is a true thing. And I'll just read the headline to you, and then we'll jump into why I think it's important for us as hunters and society as a whole. I think it's more important for society than just hunting. You know, we at the Life Outdoors believe in speaking life in and through the outdoors, and there's a very spiritual aspect to what we do in the outdoors, and that's what we're trying to point you guys towards. So when we look at stuff like this, it's one of those places where we could actually speak into, because quite honestly, this relieves human beings from having to get their own meat and take it with their own hands. And you've heard me in earlier podcasts talk about how honest it is to fill your freezer and to feed your family with meat that you took from with your own hand and the blood that you shed. And so when we look at stuff like what this is, I think we're going to do a justice to society. So let me read this to you real quick. U.S. declares that lab-grown meat safe to eat in groundbreaking move. So Singapore had been making lab-grown meat, and what they're doing is they're taking molecules out of like a chicken, and then they're replicating those molecules in the lab. I don't know. It just sounds very strange to me to do that. Now, they have their reasons. One of them is for an environmentally clean process. You know, a lot of times they're trying to tie the carbon emissions to our meat production. And, you know, that's a whole nother conversation. But at the same time, this is one of the big reasons that they say that they're pushing this forward. I kind of think that it's actually a way of I actually think it's a spiritual thing. I think people are trying to get away from the fact that we have to take blood to sustain ourselves, and they don't want that to be in front of them. I think people want to live in this utopian idea of a world that doesn't have the things that, you know, the realities that we have to face in it. We see it in big cities. We see people in big cities just living through and not having to face, like, climate, for one thing. You know, the climate's all controlled. There's people that live in cities that are able to go from building to building and never really worry about snow or those kind of things. It's getting to be more and more of a thing for urban people. And to where everything is controlled for them and they don't have to deal with the realities around them. And that's why I think hunting is such a big thing. That's why I think fishing is such a big thing. And and camping and getting out and having to deal with the environment is because I think that that is something that we as humans are spiritually connected with. A lot of our character comes from the time that we spend out getting beat up, having to deal with the flies, having to deal with all the things that you have to deal with in the outdoors. The things that we typically run from are character building things. I venture to say, you know, we were primarily a rural country before World War II, and I would venture, and then we had the Great Depression where people were kicked out of cities and having to live out of the back of their cars, which was kind of a rural lifestyle as well. So I venture to say that the character that we had going into World War II was built from the reality of having to deal with what the world is like, right? What the real world is like, not an artificial made world. And I think that's probably lends to a lot of the reason that we were able to be successful and beat a lot of the other countries in the world because of our character. It was being able to deal with the things that we had to deal with. I also think that God uses that to build character in people. If we look at what he did with the Israelites, he was trying to build character in the desert with them. It's actually the wilderness. If you read the Bible, he talks about the desert a lot, but it's the wilderness. And they were moving around in the wilderness, and he didn't take them into the land of milk and honey until their character, until they trusted him to take them there. And if you guys remember the story, you know, they were afraid to go in to the land of milk and honey. They never did really meet that goal. But what I'm saying is there are deep spiritual aspects to what we do as hunters. And that's why we at the Life Outdoors, we have a kind of a slogan that hunting is worship. We have quite a few slogans, by the way, but hunting is worship. And if it's approached right, hunting can be worship. And if you guys want to know kind of what, because that's kind of a provocative statement, if you guys want to know what I mean by that, just go to our last podcast and listen to it. But the fact of the matter is, when we start looking at what hunting is, we have to, there's some realities that we have to live with. And those realities are pretty important. And so I think that when we try to create some way of not having to deal with those realities by doing what they're doing right now. And this isn't the only thing. This is just the thing that's particular to hunting. But when they're starting to do that, that is scary to me. It's living in their own world, and it's not living in reality. So let me read a few things out of this for you and kind of get you set up on what they're doing. The article states that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration will allow a California company called Upside Foods to take living cells from chickens, then grow them in a controlled laboratory environment to produce meat production that doesn't involve actual slaughter of any animals. So that's the first part that really upsets me, is to think that you're going to, and we do it right now. I mean, don't get me wrong. People just go up and drive up to, you know, Chick-fil-A, grab their chicken, and they think nothing of the fact that that was a live animal. That's the way that they are allowed to do the animal farms that they have. You know, some of the chicken farms that are out there are not the best place for it's taking the sacredness out of what God has given us. You know, some of those chicken farms are just a big organization that is growing chickens that some of them can't even walk because they've genetically altered them so much that they're not even the original animal that the chicken was. So we're doing this to a point already. So I just want to point that out. That's why I think hunting is such a big deal, is because it keeps us grounded. We can't just go to the store and grab our food when we're hunters. We go to the store and we go by the meat aisle, and it looks like meat. It looks like an animal that we that was once there, and we get that. But I would say probably 75-80% of the people that walk by the Walmart meat counter don't even think that way. They don't even look at it as meat. They look at, or they don't even look at it as live tissue. And I think by doing what we're doing here with growing meat in a lab, we're trying to get away from it even further. We don't even want blood to be shed. And I think that's a very important thing about eating meat, is we got to understand that there was an actual animal involved. And I guess what I'm saying is, it's taking the sacredness out of getting meat. It should be a sacred thing to eat a hamburger. You should be thankful for what is in that hamburger. Now, one of the things is, if you're not thankful for what's in the hamburger, if you don't give thanks to God for being able to eat a hamburger, then you got to understand that you are no longer looking at God. See, and I think that's what this is all about, is when we grow it in a lab, we're giving thanks to human beings. We're becoming God, essentially. And there's a big movement right now about, I don't know if you guys pay much attention to what's going on in the world, but there's a globalistic movement where they said that civilizations were started on the belief of gods, and civilizations will end up as gods. And that's through the World Economic Forum is talking like that. And this is just part of that. This is just part of that, trying to become a god so we don't have to rely on God. And one of their big things is, you know, we won't have to rely on, you know, growing the feed to feed to the chickens. So we're not going to have to rely on God for water. We're not going to have to rely on God for the nutrients, the soil. And we could just become our own God, and we could control everything on our own. And that's one of the big problems that I see with this whole movement. This is something else. This is why the movement is kind of pushing itself forward. Let me read to you. The lab meat industry is keen in positioning itself as an environmentally friendly alternate to an age of growing concern over the climate impact and meat production. Now, that's still out, you guys. I've done a lot of research into the impact of the climate. And so releasing carbon into the air could have an effect. It could, you know, create this carbon loading of the atmosphere, which then creates warming of the earth in some way. And I don't know if that's actually okay. So there is a warming going on. We're in a warming trend, but we have so little of data. We have only hundreds of years of data, not even hundreds. We have just a little amount of data. And some people will say, well, yeah, but we could pull up trees and look at trees and see, you know, the difference in a wet year and a dry year, and see if how warm it was during those years by the growth rings and all this, or the ice caps, or all this stuff, right? Okay. But that's all speculation. I'm sorry. You cannot go and say that is exactly the way it was. The climate, you can't make climate estimations. It's a guess. It's a best guess, okay, if you're looking thousands of years ago. Another thing is if climate's warming, and it is, I mean, we're in a warming cycle, I should say, but that doesn't mean we're not going to be in a cooling cycle. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, everybody was talking about the ice age that we were going to enter. So if we go into a cooling cycle, you know, they'll probably be saying that's going to be the end of the earth also. And I'll tell you, when you look at the amount of carbon that a volcano puts out, or, and we have, I read somewhere yesterday that there's 50 active volcanoes right now popping off across the globe. So, the amount of carbon that a volcano puts out is like amazingly amount. It's more than what humans have caused by quite a bit. And then you look at, you know, wildfires and all this other stuff. So, yeah, maybe the carbon, maybe there is a carbon load, but I doubt it's from over cultivation of meat. Okay, so, and what I mean, and the way that they're coming at it is they're saying that all the plowing and stuff that we have to do is releasing the carbon out of the soil. And there's truth to that, you guys. I don't want to display that because, you know, our industry farming is rough. It's rough. You got to continually put nitrogen back into the ground. And a lot of our soil is turning into mineral because we've been farming it so long and we don't put anything carbon back into the soil. So our soils are just basically really mineral. If they had more organics in them, we wouldn't have to fertilize near as much. So there's some truth to this, right? I mean, and there's like truth to every kind of thing that people run with, but it's a tough deal because you look at, you know, when we plow the ground, they say that we release carbon when we're plowing the ground, but I don't believe that there's a whole lot of carbon in the ground at the moment. You know, if you look at a lot of our fields, they don't go to fallow very, very long. And I think that's why God probably told us to let them go to fallow once every 7 years. Just don't grow anything in that field for that once in 7 years, and then weeds will grow up into it. And then when you plow those weeds back under, you're taking all that carbon back out of the air and putting it back in the ground. So it makes sense, right? It makes sense in some ways to do that. But it's pretty interesting to see that they're trying to get away from this, and they're trying to do it under the guise of they're trying to say that they're protecting the environment by doing this. And I'm telling you that it's different than that. It's not just about protecting the environment. It's so they don't have to think about God. I'm telling you, that's what it's a lot of this is about, is they don't have to understand that the blood of sin is on their hands. And I'm telling you right now, that's all of us, right? If we're going to eat meat, or if we're going to eat anything, we got to kill it to eat it. And that wasn't the case before the fall of humanity. And so it's a big metaphor for us looking to somebody else to have to connect us back to God. And that's what I'm talking about here. And when we grow meat in a lab, we're not connecting to that anymore. Now, check this out. There are more than 150 cultivated meat companies around the world, backed by several billions of dollars in investments, according to Good Family Institute. So 150 cultivated meat. I bet you guys didn't even know about this until I brought it to your attention. So we have labs that are raising meat around the world. And it's trying to clean our, it to me, it's putting the fig leaf on after the fall and not having animal skins on. And for those of you who don't know the Bible real well, the minute that Adam and Eve sinned, they thought that they decided that they were naked. So they went and covered themselves up, and they covered themselves up with fig leaves. And God was like, no, that's not going to do. You're going to wear animal skins. Now, understand this, that these animals that they put the skins on were something that Adam had just named. Right. So Adam loved these animals. This is not like, just going out and find. I mean, we as hunters actually do this. We love the elk that we hunt. I mean, or the ducks, right? How much time do you spend watching elk or watching ducks? How much time do you spend just thinking about that? And you like to see them and you like to check them out, and you know, you really put a lot of your money, your time and effort in making sure that they are able to be around in the wild. So understand that, you know, it would have been really weird for Adam, after naming them, to have God come and kill an animal and skin it in front of them and put the skins on them. And then to remind them that this is what they caused with their sin. that they caused the fact that, that there has to be a death to sustain their lives. Another thing, God, when he looks at this, he knew that the reality is they had to have the skins on. So they had to face reality. And I think this lab growing meat is to get away from that reality. Things haven't changed, you guys, in over thousands of years. We're still humans and we still have the same problems. We just try to cover them up. So with that said, you know, God looks at animals and their death and the sacrifice of them as something that is sacred. Okay. And that's the big deal here is God looks at this as a sacred thing. And then if we jump outside of that sacred way of doing things, it should be something that gives us a step back. When we take an animal's life, that's part of the reason I have such a problem with some of the things that you see on Instagram and Facebook and you know, on YouTube is when people use animals as just a ploy to grow their Instagram accounts or and they don't pay any kind of attention to the sacredness of taking an animal's life, it becomes perverted. It becomes something that it shouldn't be. And it seems like that's what's selling anymore. But at the same time, we got to understand this is the same thing when you create meat in a lab. It's the same thing as just mass killing animals and not thinking about what you're doing in that moment, drawing blood and not caring about it. So don't get me wrong, you guys. I don't want to sound like Mr. I don't shoot animals, but I do want to point out that it is a sacred act. It should be something that should not be taken lightly. It shouldn't be something that we just do to prove how cool we are or to grow our Instagram accounts or anything else. It should be something that we pay very close attention to. It is a sacred act. So God looks at it that way. He totally does. You guys probably have heard the story of the Passover. I'm going to go over that just a little bit to kind of illustrate why I think meat is something, quite honestly, I think it's something that every human should take with their own hand, or at least be a part in, or at least watch, because I think that would give us a reverence for it. The Passover lamb was an animal that God directed the Israelites to sacrifice the night that Egypt. So God had told the Pharaoh of Egypt to let the Israelites go. And they had gone through several different plagues, and the Pharaoh still did not let them go. He still held them as slaves. And so God said, well, okay, there's going to be one last thing, and I'm going to kill the firstborn of all the people that are that don't have the blood of the Passover lamb over their door. And so he directed the people of Israel to grow up, to grab their best lamb. Now understand that some of these lambs, like if you were a kid, those of you who've been around 4-H and put so much time into a lamb, understand what's going on here, that this is a... All right, so before I was rudely interrupted, the Passover lamb was a lamb that everybody in the household pretty much knew about, and it was the best lamb, and it was probably the lamb that you guys, if you've been in 4-H, you know how much you get attached to these animals. Well, God said, take that lamb in, kill it, and place the blood over the top of the door frame. And as the destroyer comes around, so God sent the destroyer, and as the destroyer came around, he would pass over all the people that were covered by the blood of the lamb. Now, that's a direct parallel with what Jesus has done for us. And this was a metaphor. This was thousands of years before Jesus ever stepped foot on earth. And it was a metaphor for what Jesus has done with his blood. We are covered by the blood of the lamb. And the funny thing about this is that is even true today. Hunting is a metaphor for that same thing. The Passover lamb was actually shown, was showing what Jesus Christ has done for us. Jesus actually died in our stead. And so when we start looking at this whole idea of blood and shedding blood, I don't know if you guys, a lot of you guys have probably killed an elk before and did a lot of cleaning. And I don't know about you, but whenever I packed an elk out or whenever I've cleaned an elk, I was wearing that elk's blood. And it's a very sobering place to be. I mean, there's several emotions that you go through when you kill an animal. But wearing the blood out and having the blood on your pack and having that kind of thing is so surreal that if you don't look at it as being something that's sacred, I think you're missing the point of why we actually eat meat. And I don't take that lightly, and I mean it pretty much the whole way. So the Passover lamb, if you look at 1 Corinthians 5:7, the Passover lamb is talked about. It's talked about that Jesus is the Passover lamb for us. And John 1:29 says he's the Lamb of God. And you guys, you got to understand that when we look at the symbology here, it's heavy. It's heavy symbology. And we've moved away, just as non-hunters, just if we just get our meat out of the grocery store, we've moved away from understanding the blood that is involved and understanding that, you know, when we eat a hamburger, the molecules of that hamburger were a living animal, and those molecules provide us with the nutrients, and they actually permeate us. The nutrients come out of that living thing, goes into our living molecules, and we become, in a way, one with it. And that's all a metaphor for what happens when Jesus shed his blood on the cross for us. When you come to Christ, so here's the thing. None of us have lived out what we were created to be. And by doing so, that pulled death. For all have sinned, and the wages for sin is death. And so the only way that we could be brought out of that and be brought back into our original design and our communion with God, and because we are made in his image, so communion with him means to be attached back to him. When we are done, when that happens, that's why we take communion as Christians, is because it's a molecular thing that shows this exact thing that happens spiritually. And when we do that, what we're doing is we're being covered by Jesus' blood. He bled instead of us on the cross, and we actually have to connect to that blood to be saved. His blood is the blood that is saving us. It's the propitiation. It's actually the payment. We actually wear it as the payment for our sin. So we don't have to spend our eternity disconnected from God, which that is hell in itself. The disconnection from God is hell. So everything that you see going on the earth right now that is hellish, all the crap, all the evil, all the stuff, that's because it's disconnected from God. Everything that is connected to God is all the good stuff. And we humans don't even know how good it is. We don't even have a clue because we're such a fallen creature. We've sinned so much. Even in our daily lives, we are not perfect, right? And we were created to be perfect because God is perfect and his image would be perfect. So the minute that we disconnected from that, we don't even understand total goodness, but we can come to him, and it's in the will. It's in the will of wanting to be good. It says that God takes our heart out of rock, our rock heart out. So it's like not even a living heart, and puts us a heart of flesh in when we come to him. He actually makes us want to live and makes us want to know more about him. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't stop sinning on this side of eternity. What it does mean, though, is that we hate it, that we want to live a sin-free life, and that we try to, okay? So, with that said, I think that the metaphor, one of the ways that we can actually understand that this is the way it is God gives us these metaphors. You know, In Romans, it says that the creation points straight to God, and we have no excuse not to know who God is if we know the creation. Well, if they keep trying to pull us out of the creation by us creating our own, like us creating our own meat, then we are not equating that meat to God. It's the same thing as when the farmers started, early farmers in the West, say like in the 1800s, had to depend on the rain. They prayed a lot more than farmers do nowadays. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm sure there's farmers praying for rain now too. But you got to understand that the more and more that we take on ourselves and we control ourselves, the less and less we rely on Him. And that's why I think that this meat thing is a really weird thing. So, with that said, you guys, I hope this isn't too trippy for you. I'm going to bring a lot more of these podcasts to you because there's a lot going on right now. Humanity is really rebelling against God. It's actually, if you look at the progressive moving forward of humanity, it's actually stepping back as far as I'm concerned, but it's trying to detach itself from God even more. And as we do that, you're going to get more and more of what you see in society and more of what you see of the rotten stuff. So I think it's great to pull this through. And then it also gives us, as we're hunting, it gives us a deeper sense of why we're out there. And it actually helps the hunt. Quite honestly, it makes my hunting so much better and so much more enjoyable. So that's what we mean when we talk about hunting as worship and speaking life in and through the hunt, so in and through the outdoors. So hopefully this has helped you guys. Please, if any of this stuff helps, let me know, okay? It's hard to produce this stuff. It costs me money. I'm not, I don't make money off of this. I actually spend quite a bit of money doing this. But if it's helping, I want to place my efforts and my money and everything that I have in things that are real and helping people come to Christ. That's really what I'm here for. But I really would like to know if that's where it's going, because I need to know where to place my energy, and whether it's money energy or whether it's time energy or even emotional energy, right? So please let me know. Leave me some messages. You know, I'm on all of the social media platforms. And if you feel like you want to help promote this, send this podcast to people. Also, if you feel like you want to help out with the finances of bringing this podcast out, you could buy a hat from us, or you could send. We are trying to move this forward and trying to get it in the most people's hands we can. And I have limited resources, so I can only do what I can do. It's through you guys that you guys can get this message out. So thanks a bunch. Thanks for listening, and I hope you guys keep living.
Thanks for listening to the Life Outdoors podcast. Join the Life Nation by spreading this podcast, or by going over to our YouTube channel, giving us a subscribe, or even by following us on Instagram. All these things help spread the life. All right. Thanks, guys, for listening. Keep living.
In wild country, rules were not created by man. In wild country, the challenge of what's outside brings you closer to what's inside. Miss Wild Country, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, presented by Expedition Enterprises.
It's going to get a little hairy.
Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.